Hello, podcast listeners. This is Dr. Fred Rivara from the Firearm Injury and Policy Research Program at the University of Washington. And today, we're very lucky to have one of our PIPRIT fellows speaking with us, Dr. Kelsey Conrad. Kelsey has been with the program for quite a while. She finished up her doctorate degree in the School of Social Work recently and joined PIPRIT as a fellow. And she had a publication recently in JAMA Network Open. And Kelsey, can you tell us a bit about why you decided to do the study? What was the research question?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. So there's been several studies that have looked at firearm storage at kind of a single cross-section of time. So we have that information maybe in different demographic groups. We know maybe how men differ from women or veterans differ from non-veterans. But what we haven't had the chance to do yet is look at how secure storage is changing over time. And this has really been a limitation in the data. These data just really haven't existed. So the data that we have here in Washington on secure storage is really unique because we have it at these what we call repeated cross-section. So we can take single snapshots year after year and look at the population level, how are things changing? And beyond that, because of the way these questions are asked, we can also look at how trends are maybe differing between different demographic groups. So we were curious, maybe we're seeing more secure firearm storage in urban households, but not necessarily rural households. So with this study, we were wondering if we could see these changes in trends over time, but also looking within demographic groups and seeing if there are any disparities that we're seeing.
And I know you use the BRFSS system, Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance System. Tell me about particularly about the firearm questions in that surveillance system and which states actually use those.
Yeah, so I'll start by telling a little bit more about how BRFSS runs, because I think it's really interesting. So it's a nationally representative telephone survey. It's sponsored by the CDC, but it's actually run by individual state health departments. And that's where we get excited about this opportunity to look at these firearm questions. So because it's run by these individual state health departments, that means they get to decide to some extent what questions go in. So the CDC BRFSS has a what they call a core set of questions that every state asks every single year. They have a rotating core, which is a set of questions that get kind of put in on a rotating basis every few years. They have optional modules where states can decide to, they can opt into a specific set of questions. And then states can also have these state added questions. BRFSS did have an optional firearm module for a few years up until 2004. But from 2005 up until 2021, they did not have that module as an option for states. We see a handful of states kind of sporadically include questions around firearm storage as a state added question. So they just decide this is something we're going to add into this survey. But Washington is the only state that's collected these data frequently enough that we can look at any kind of trend longitudinally. Beyond that, also Washington asks extra questions about firearm storage that lets us look at this in a little bit more granular detail than the BRFSS module that other states ask. So we get a little bit extra information. And I think in this current political climate where we're seeing so many data disappearing from websites, we as researchers are really feeling grateful that Washington is kind of continuing to put resources towards continuing these data so we can see how things continue to change.
Great. And what were the key findings of your study?
Yeah, so we see pretty consistently over the decade, we look 2013 to 2022, the proportion of households that had a firearm in the household stayed about consistent. About a third of Washington households have a fire report having a firearm in the home. I feel honored to be able to bring a little bit of good news to public health. I feel like it can be rare these days, but we are seeing that on average, Washington households are storing their firearms more securely over the last decade, up from about 35% in 2013 to 49% in 2022. It's a really significant jump. We also saw across almost all of the demographic groups that we looked at, all of those demographic groups were storing more securely, which is also very great news. Males, females, veterans, non-veterans, households with and without children, all of the different age groups we looked at in urban and suburban areas. And the only place we didn't see movement is in rural households. So with that said, we did see persistent disparities between the groups, and that didn't change overall. So there is still a lot of room for progress.
Do you have any idea how our state compares to other states with regard to storage?
It's a good question, and it's kind of hard to tell. because as we've talked about earlier, we don't really have these kind of data in other states. In addition to not having that longitudinal data that lets us look at trends, the way the most other states ask these questions lets us look at unsecure firearms, so unlocked and loaded, which is going to be a smaller proportion. Whereas in this study, because of the way that Washington asked the question, we can look at secure, so locked and unloaded. So we don't really know for sure. There have been some other studies that looked at firearm storage in other samples, a couple of nationally representative ones, and we do see slightly higher numbers here in Washington than we do in those other studies. And although we aren't able in this particular study to assess the exact cause of these increases in secure storage in Washington, it's somewhat expected, I think, given the substantial investments that Washington has made in secure storage efforts over the last 2 budget cycles. The Washington legislature dedicated a total of $2 million towards secure storage efforts. In 2019, we passed that I-1639 law, which can put criminal penalties if an unauthorized person accesses an unsecured firearm and causes harm. And we have so many different secure storage initiatives, the Lock It Up program, educational kind of campaigns, public awareness efforts. So Washington has really put a lot of investment in shifting secure storage culture and actually providing material resources out into communities, sending those lock boxes out and giving people the resources they need to securely store their firearms.
I know that the Seattle Children's Hospital and the health department have really teamed up to try to provide those lock boxes to families throughout the state. What do you think the implications are of your study?
So I think this is a really great starting point for other states interested who are interested in promoting secure storage. We hope Washington will continue to collect these data, which will give us what we need as researchers to know exactly which initiatives or which policies are really moving that needle so other states can learn. But with that said, we see these increases. These are very promising. It's really great to hold on to this good news. But we did still find only at the highest in 2022, 49% of households had all firearms stored securely. So that's still more than half of households that have at least one firearm unsecured, meaning unlocked or loaded. So we have lots of room for improvement. And we also didn't see an increase in rural households. So we definitely need to be partnering with those communities to build initiatives and campaigns that are speaking directly to their concerns and their unique context.
Sort of a little bit of a cautionary note is the paper that Matt Miller from Boston Northeastern University published in the same journal, Gemini Book Open, last week. Do you want to just comment on that paper, and how do you think it relates to what you found here in the state of Washington?
I think it's always so exciting to see any empirical evidence for the importance of secure storage. Doing these studies is very difficult. So I was very excited to see that come out. For any listeners who maybe haven't had a chance to look at that study, they used the 1993 National Mortality Follow-Back Study, which took a representative sample of those who died, individuals who died, interviewed their household members about circumstances surrounding their death. So they looked at the authors for this paper, looked at the association between an unlocked or a loaded firearm and that being in the household and death by firearm. And then they looked at that association between adults and also among adolescents. So again, I think this is adding to the growing body of evidence of how important it is to have firearms locked up and unloaded when you have kids in the household. We have study after study showing that it is protective against suicide among youth, some evidence about it being protective against unintentional death, and some limited evidence around it being protective around homicide as well, but really particularly around youth. So I think it's just kind of continuing to, that's a really, really important call to be for folks who have kids in the home to be locking and unloading their firearms. I think secure storage, this study, of course, didn't look at suicide as a particular outcome. And I think secure storage is important for so many reasons. It may be preventive, against theft. We have a really huge problem here in
Right.
Washington,
That's
about
correct.
3,800 incidents a year of firearms being stolen. And while I think the research is still very nascent, I think it's very logical that when your firearms are locked, it's harder for someone to steal them and use them in a crime. So, there are lots of other reasons, beyond suicide prevention why we would want folks to be storing their firearms securely. This preventing access for minors is one of them. Theft is another. But also, I think it's important that we don't totally discount the idea of secure storage as a suicide prevention tool, especially among clinicians. And I think this is important because it was in a JAMA paper, or it was in a JAMA journal, JAMA Network Open. There are some limitations with this study. As any study, it's a little bit older data, so we don't know if these
Right.
associations would potentially hold true in 2025. I think their findings make logical sense. Kids don't necessarily control their own firearm access, so we're talking about probably an adult changing the way that that firearm is secured in the home, so that's great. They recommend, given their findings, that clinician instead of storage, so removing the firearm from the home. I think that that is absolutely appropriate for many individuals who are experiencing suicidal ideation. If they're at imminent risk of suicide, absolutely, that may make sense. And we definitely need to educate clinicians and the general public on the many options that are available to do that. Here in Washington, we have a lot more options available for removing firearms from the home than many other states. So getting that word out is really important. But I think there's also a lot of times where a patient or a client may be unwilling to remove firearms from the home, and they may not meet criteria for that involuntary intervention, things like extreme risk protection orders. So I don't want clinicians to therefore get the idea that counseling about secure firearms is categorically ineffective. There are lots when we talk about that as a clinical intervention. We're not just saying, to a client, go lock your firearms. That's really important. It's part of this more robust, larger intervention that includes follow-up. Hopefully, we're actually providing them a locking device. We're counseling them on creative solutions, like a combination lock isn't going to be a barrier, but if we can give them a cable lock with a key and encourage them, hey, can you give that key to another trusted adult? There are
Yes.
extra layers of secure storage that I think can be appropriate in a clinical intervention for adults who are suicidal. So, the goal of my research overall is to really build tools to help clinicians figure out when and how to talk about secure storage and when a higher level of care is needed. So I think this is a really exciting study.
Well, thanks so much, Kelsey. Your study is exciting as well. So the two studies are a nice
Thank you.
combination together.
Yeah,
Thanks so much
yeah.
for doing this. And for our podcast listeners, please go to our website. You can hear other podcasts we've done as well as see these papers. Thanks very much.